You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey. Welcome to HR Bandit, the show where we cover the top three news from the world of work every single month. This is Apoorva.
And I'm Ankita. And we are so glad to have you here for our third to last episode of the year. Can you believe it, Apoorva? I had to pinch myself before saying it, but we just have a few more recordings before we hit the new year.
Ankita, please, no. I mean, were my social media feeds not enough that you have to remind me about the impending end of the year as well?
Well, Apoorva, like they say, believe or not, here it comes. On a real note though, how did you celebrate Diwali?
So Diwali is that time of the year when I miss home the most. This time I was quarantined at home as my daughter and husband both caught an infection. But we still managed to deck up the house. We dressed up a little and I decided to cook an Indian feast for two.
That sounds like a good Diwali given the odds. I hope they're doing better. I would have killed for some Indian festive food, but instead I shucked a dozen oysters in Seattle with a colleague and called that my celebration. However, it wasn't all bad. I did manage to catch one Diwali party before I caught the plane. So I did get some festive food, but I could have done with more.
Yeah, that's called making the most of your circumstances. So, and I'm glad to hear that. But now let's please get us back to our episode because our listeners are waiting.
Okay, let's jump straight in. For our first topic, at a time when organizations are cutting management layers, founder CEOs are being contrarian by choosing two successors instead of one. For our second topic, work from home takes a new twist with Microsoft Teams now calling you out if you are logged in from an internet connection that's at home. And for our third and final topic, the Nobel Prizes were out in October. Now, while this is not something we've covered in the past years, the Nobel Prize for Economics this year caught our attention. So October did not let us down. Apoorva, let's go into our first topic.
So one of the most intriguing leadership stories this month comes from the world of corporate succession. As Ankita said, it's from founders who believe that one CEO just isn't enough. Spotify's Daniel Ek recently announced that he will be moving into an executive chairman role. Now, his reasoning is quite practical. Spotify has evolved into a sprawling business with one foot in the creative world of artists and another in the hyper-competitive tech landscape. He believes that no single leader can balance both sides effectively, so he's opting for a complementary strengths. Interestingly, though, Spotify isn't alone. Organizations like Netflix, for example, have flourished under co-CEOs, but there are others who have struggled too. For example, in 2020, SAP dismantled its dual CEO structure just after 6 months, citing the need for clearer accountability and faster decision making in the times of the pandemic. However, I looked at some data and it seems that performance data kind of supports this approach. So a study of 87 public companies led by co-CEOs between 1996 and 2020, as per a HBR article, found that they generated average annual shareholder returns of 9.5% while the duo was in charge, which is better than the 6.9% average for each firm's relevant index. Nearly 60% outperformed, and the average co-CEO tenure was about 5 years, on par with solo CEOs. Ankita, I know I said a lot there, but what are your thoughts on this? I'm not sure if I can call it a trend, but this news story.
Well, sometimes the contradictory news out there really cracks me up. Now, this is one of them, right? Like, we're hearing so much news on too many managers, too many senior managers, too many directors, and so on. And then founders and boards can't make up their mind and decide to have two CEOs instead of one. Now, I get the concept of complementary skills, which I'll let you get a little deeper into. But, like, can you imagine if I walked up to one of my, say, VPs and I said, hey, I can't decide who can do this job, so let's have two people do it instead of one. Like, we are literally saying that that's not good enough everywhere else. And then, like, I'm very confused. Plus, like, are we giving two people the salary of CEOs? Like, what's happening there?
Hearing about this in a news outlet, and there was an interesting point made where one of the folks said, to your point about two salaries, Ankita, that if there are co-CEOs, we are the expectation or the output that the company wants to derive also, at least the expectations of it doubles. And maybe that's what we are seeing from the performance numbers that I quoted, that on an average, they do outperform companies with just one CEO. So my personal reservations, which I will come to on this topic aside, I do think this also reflects how the nature of leadership is changing. So today, CEOs are, we expect them to wear a lot of hats in times, in really turbulent times. We expect them to be a storyteller, a technologist, a diplomat, a culture architect, all rolled into one. And expecting one person to excel at all of that feels very unrealistic. I think splitting the role acknowledges that reality, and it also allows founders to maintain influence without micromanaging. They can step back but still shape the company's future. And like I said, about complementary skill sets, one person could handle vision, partnerships, product, while the other runs day-to-day ops and scaling. So I think there is a case to be made here, but I also believe there are a lot of pitfalls with this approach. If the two people do not get along well, like, that's a disaster in the making. Who is the clear decision maker? Like, you cannot have this two-headed monster where every time you need a decision, you have to get these two people with very different mindsets to align. So I think personally, I do have reservations on this approach.
Yeah, I don't think the concept of co-CEOs is new, right? Like, it has been there for a while, but it's not really the most popular format for exactly the reasons you called out, right? So only 87 of the 200 S&P and Russell companies listed from 1996 to 2020 had co-CEOs. And now this stat hasn't been updated, and there seems to be more in the past few years than before. But I do think, like we've always said, CEOs are someone who can wear those multiple hats, or at least build a team around them that can advise them on the multiple hats. And increasingly, I don't know whether there's a shortage of talent in the market, which is why we can't find people who can do that. But I think us looking at this new model of there being two CEOs is a way of rethinking organization structure and everything else. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Netflix does on how much success they have. And of course, if they aren't successful, we might just come back here and track it all.
Absolutely. Okay, so with that, let's move to the next topic, which is also something that caught our attention this month. And I think it's going to make a lot of people uneasy, maybe. So Microsoft announced that Teams will now display whether an employee is working from home or from the office. It is part of their broader push to make hybrid work more transparent, but the reactions have been, well, predictably mixed. On one hand, it sounds like a simple status update, just another small data point in the Teams interface. But on the other, it feels like a step towards what some are calling location visibility tracking. The feature automatically pulls information from the company's Microsoft Places platform and lets your colleagues and your manager know where you are logging in from that day. Microsoft says that this is meant to reduce friction and help people plan in-person collaboration better. But let's be honest, for a lot of employees, this will sound like a digital version of peeking over their cubicle wall to check if they're actually at their desk.
I agree. And I think it's been currently pitched as a way to coordinate better. But I think you and I both know how real life implications turn out for tech features. And what begins as a collaboration tool then becomes a monitoring tool. Like, I have had so many snide remarks, forget about whether Teams says where we are working from, but people look at someone's background and be like, oh, so you're not in an office today. So much from working from home and working from the office culture. So I think this is just one more nudge for someone to pass a snark remark on where someone's working from. But I do think, like, a manager who's already skeptical about remote work might start noticing who's working from home too often. There are many tools that allow us to do that, but this is just another tool that will help do that. And I do think the whole work from home and work from office space is getting very tricky. So I do find it interesting that Microsoft framed it as a part of their hybrid experience suite, and it's the same umbrella that includes AI-driven meeting summaries and occupancy data. So I don't think it's a random feature. It's a very intentional move by them to let people know where they are, and it could just, you know, drive some of those biases, as, you know, visibility is productivity.
Visibility is productivity. That is such an important distinction, and I hope this doesn't become a trend. However, the fact that Microsoft has rolled this out, this is a new feature. I'm sure they've done their customer studies and then come up with this. So there is, looks like there is demand for a feature like this. Otherwise, they wouldn't build it, which worries me a little.
I really get signs from everywhere in the tech industry and outside that we are going back to the office where we can. Like, these remote conversations are going to become a rarity.
Yes, but I think, and the rollout of these tools is inevitable. What's optional is how we use them. We can either weaponize them or we can use them to genuinely coordinate better. So I think the right way forward would be to make this data employee controlled as far as we can and let folks decide whether or not they want to share their working location.
Sounds good. Okay. I'm going to take us to our last and final story. And this time I am going to launch into a bit of monologue now, because this is something I'm really excited about, because it is important. So listen up. This year's Nobel Prize for Economics went to three gentlemen who urged us to not take innovation for granted. So let's back up a little to a long time ago. Now, for many decades and an entire millennium, living standards did not change. Like, our main aim was to find food and survive. Sure, we invented the wheel, but economic progress was mostly flat. And that was until we hit the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution really sped things up. And over 200 years, we've had a series of incredible innovations that drastically upped the available leisure time and our quality of life. Now, my dad often jokes that I live a better life than Queen Victoria. Now, his justification is that I have electricity, running water, air conditioning, sunglasses when the sun is in my eye, and a whole host of things that she never had access to. And I agree, like 200 years ago, laundry day was an all-day event, and now we can just chuck things into a machine and go on with our regular life. So these three economists won an award for giving us a scientific framework to understand innovation and try to ensure that it doesn't slow or die down.
Well, and this is important because if you look at, say, 1300s to the 1700s, the rate of economic growth was almost flat. Yes, we got the printing press, and that allowed for ideas to be shared freely. But after the Industrial Revolution, we got the steam engine, bulb, telephone, cars, robotics, and now AI. So and what's the variable here? So post-industrial revolution, a lot of innovations started building on one another, drastically improving economic growth, quality of life, and over long periods of time, a consistent stock market growth. So what really is creative destruction, Ankit?
So per these economists, if the society is not willing to destroy, it cannot create. And it is what we are seeing now, and it's what we've been seeing for a while. The very extensive horse industry got replaced by cars. And yes, we have horses around, but they're mostly just for joyrides or racing. Massive piles of DVDs at home got destroyed by Netflix. And the cars that replaced the horses are now getting replaced by self-driving cars. And that is creative destruction. They stress that for the rise of something new, something must be destroyed. And while the death of certain industries causes panic and pain, it also leads to the birth of something new. So Apurva, like, we're seeing this a lot in this day and age. What's your takeaway for us?
So firstly, I want to thank you for including this topic, Ankita, because this has really piqued a lot of thought as I was going through the study by these economists. One key takeaway for me has been how the ability to embrace change is important for creative destruction. So if you want to be an innovative organization, your culture has to be set in such a way that you are allowing that you're fostering change management and you are allowing people to embrace change without feeling guarded. So, for example, in today's day and age, are you helping employees upskill on AI rather than just creating fear about them losing their jobs? So I think that's one key takeaway for me, change management and how organizations embrace it.
Yeah, and their study also gives me hope, right? Like when we see current jobs getting destroyed, it's like, take some heart. Things are getting innovated and yes, industries are getting disrupted, but maybe this is what, like this is what it took for all of our quality of life improvements over the long term. And maybe there's reason why this is happening. It is what got us this far. However, this does not minimize the need for policies to save the short-time losers, because that will directly impact the willingness to destroy, right? Like if we let people fall through the crack without guarding them, of course, there's going to be resistance to destruction, which will then lead to, you know, innovation being slower. So I do think for me, those are the two key takeaways, to like not lose hope and heart based on everything that's happening in the world today, because this is the most rapid era of creative destruction that we are seeing. But it also reemphasizes that, hey, like maybe the governments need to step in to ensure that, you know, no one's falling through the crack while we are destroying.
Yeah, I would probably club it as, you know, how do you show care while embracing change?
Absolutely.
Okay, so those were our top three for this month. But Bandits, you know, we have our second list ready for you. And here's what else you should know before we let you go.
Well, first, I'm not going to miss an opportunity to talk about our favorite Jamie Dimon. JP Morgan's new headquarter, TAR, in New York has everyone talking. It has 60 floors and is taller than the Empire State Building. It has a custom smell that has been built for every single pitch room. It has an exemplary art collection that has been donated by some famous person and establishment, and it has 19 restaurants inside the building. Jamie is definitely not backing down on his speech where he said he's bringing everyone back into the office. Second, Meta has everyone confused because it's now cutting jobs in its super intelligent lab. On one hand, it's hiring AI talent, and then on the other, it's letting them go. Lastly, also about Meta, who has now joined the gangs of Google and Microsoft in mandating AI use. That's a lot of news, and I can feel the clock telling us that it's time to get out of here. But before we do, Apoorva, did you dress up for Halloween?
Well, not yet, but you know, maybe that's something I can answer in the next episode.
Well, I'm not going to a Halloween party. I don't have a costume in store, but if I did, I would probably dress up as Copilot or one of our other Gen AI, agentic AI tools, and I'd be carrying a chainsaw. And you can assume what that chainsaw is for.
Now we need to see you in that costume. Like, I'm dying imagining you doing that. So maybe that's another thing we park for the next one. And with that, I'm going to get us out of here. So Bandits, it's been a pleasure, and we'll be back next month. On behalf of NHRDN and Ankita, this is Apoorva, and we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.